The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
When you read this research, what was your reaction? Surprise, surprise, or shock, or this is what we know?
Well, I suppose this is what we know. What really struck me is that it's really welcome to have such eminent people, many of them I know personally, who are have given the time and energy to focus on this issue. And it also, I suppose, what I welcome with it is that it leads to conversations like this to talk about youth mental health and to talk about the issues that are there. What we know in Jigsaw, and Jigsaw is the National Centre for Youth Mental Health that's been working with young people aged 12 to 25 for about the past 18 years now, we know that adolescence is beginning earlier, but we also know that the transition to adulthood is ending later. And that tells us a lot in terms of thinking about why we need to focus on young people's mental health. And what this study is highlighting, what our experience is highlighting, is that young people, particularly around the age of 15, experience significant mental health problems. And 75% of mental health problems, if they're going to occur, are going to occur by the age of 25. So the modern thinking really is that we need to think about young people in the age band 12 to 25 rather than previously think about a cutoff at 18 and see that they'll just transition into adulthood and they'll be fine.
Okay, now the two things you said, that people are entering adolescence earlier, which is the pathway to adulthood, and yet not reaching adulthood until later. How much of that is to do with our own inability to build resilience in our kids?
I think part of it, there certainly is a challenge there. There's a certainly, we know that adolescence for everybody has been a time of transition, you know, the onset of puberty, the sense of forming their identity, certain academic pressures, friendship groups and so on. And all of that has always been there, time immemorial. But what we know really in the past really 20 years is we've studied this area, we've looked at it more, and we know what are the burdens that are on young people, and they're significantly impacted much more recently in the last 5 to 8 years by social media, by the sense of young people becoming global citizens. Part of that is around our old ways of teaching young people and supporting them to enter into adulthood have been very focused on skills, the world of work. And now what we need to think about and what we have been thinking about and what this research is really calling for is a greater emphasis on the well-being of young people.
Mm. Now, time was when parents could actually control a lot of the inputs into their kids, whether it was the parents themselves or the teachers designated in loco parentis in school. Now it's the phone in their pocket which determines what they know and what they learn.
It is. And I was speaking to some of our clinicians yesterday in Roscommon, and what they were talking about was the reality of young people being exposed to so much stimulation, to so much information. And the difficulty is that at that young age, when the brain is still developing, young people don't yet have the skills, and many adults still struggle to have those skills of being able to look at information, process it accordingly, decide is it useful, is it not, is it even valid, is there an evidence behind it, or is it just sensational? So all of those things are very much coming as almost as an assault, that sense of being overwhelmed. But we also know over the last number of years that we know more about neurodivergent young people. We know more about learning styles. We know more about how young people learn and process. And all of those things should really help us to try to make a difference. But actually what we need to do, or what is needed and what the paper is calling for, is action that, I suppose, at a local, a regional and a global level. And part of that is the influence of social media, but it's also around how we organise services.
How do you limit the influence of social media? That genie's out of the bottle. I mean, are we depending on not just our local government here in Ireland to act, but we're depending on the EU taking a view on how much of this stuff should ever be allowed into the pockets of young people?
Yes, I think there's, we can look at it and decide that that's, you know, it's an issue for policy and legislation. It absolutely is, and there does need to be work done on that. But what we've also got to think about is, as you said, the genie is out of the bottle, social media is here. How are we preparing and supporting our young people to interact with social media? How are we helping them in their critical thinking, in their use of time, in their balance, really, in finding a balance in terms of how it's used? How are we modeling that as adults, young people? And I suppose the experience has been that we can spend a lot of time talking to young people and telling them what not to do. But we know, and particularly in Jigsaw, we know that some young people, particularly those who are in more rural areas or are feeling more isolated, do find a lot of support and information and advice from social media. But it's about up to organisations like ourselves and others to really work to ensure that we're giving the good advice, the best advice, but also that we're skilling the young people to be able to make sense of what they're seeing.
So whose job is to give those skills? I mean, in many ways, parents do a lot of the heavy lifting when kids are younger, but we more and more depend on schools and modules in schools, the latest being teaching kids to drive in transition year, or the rules of the road and road safety generally. I mean, whose job is it to do this kind of work?
I think it's shared responsibility, really. It's how do we support parents? How do we support young people? How do we support schools? In Jigsaw, we would have done some very good work with schools. We would work with the Education Psychology Service, with the Department of Education, with the HSE, with many, many community groups, community and voluntary sector, the sports organisations, to really help adults become one good adult in terms of thinking about how can they support and encourage a young person. But I think it's really important in terms of understanding that this is a shared cause, and I would say a shared cause rather than a shared burden, because I think if we can invest more in young people, it's going to be for the benefit of all, and that's very much what the article talks about. And there is an economic argument in terms of supporting young people, so that transition to adulthood makes or helps them to become much more productive adults in the world and in Ireland. But it's really important in terms of recognising that given the pressures, the concerns that are there, that we have to do more. And by doing more means investing, but investing in ways that aren't the traditional ways of investing.
You know that old saying, the devil finds work for idle hands. Is that where we need to focus on? In other words, if young people are productively occupied doing things that they really enjoy, they may not be dependent so much on their phones.
In many ways, many of the young people who come to us in Jigsaw don't—they don't talk about idleness or time to fill. The reality is, I suppose, is that there's many, many different pressures on young people, be that academic or multiple activities.
No, but they tell you they're spending 4 hours a day simply on their phone, scrolling through TikTok or whatever other social media sites. I mean, that is an absolute waste of time.
It is in many. In many ways, and there is a sense for some young people of belonging and connection, but it is around that balance. It's around recognizing that, you know, 20 years ago we wouldn't have had such a thing. People would have spent the time in other ways. And the question now is, what is the loss that's happening? What is the loss in terms of how information from a young person is being processed, or relationships are formed, or connections are made? And it's around how do we support that as a society in terms of thinking about physical activity for young people, community connection, social connection, and relationships with really meaningful and face-to-face relationships.
I'll give an example of what's coming in on our screen. We're struggling with our daughter who's over 25 and possibly being diagnosed with OCD. A lot of her issues have been exacerbated by constantly using Dr. Google. How do we stop it? Please help.
I think the difficulty now is that there is enormous amounts of information freely available. And the question is that, you know, we tend to trust something that we see written down, but do we have enough skills to be able to synthesize that, understand that? And sometimes people can find that, and this emerged during COVID, that people will seek information themselves and sort of close that circle, so they don't connect with another person or check with a GP or check with a professional or have a conversation with a trusted adult. And really, what we would be saying is it continues to be important to have that conversation And Dr. Google is in many ways a sense of isolation. How do we break beyond that and come back to having a face-to-face, honest discussion where people are able to talk about what's worrying and concerning them?
I'll read you a few more. My son is a big gamer, and it seems to really affect his socialization skills and concentration. We've tried to limit it, but it ends up being a row. He's 16 years of age. Another one, we are holding firm not giving my daughter a phone until she is 16, but she needs to access her friends. What can we do?
Part of this is, when we discuss this, we look at it with young people, we get a sense of it. The common consensus is, among young people, this isn't good for me, this is harming me. But if I don't continue to participate in it, then I'm going to be isolated. So if everybody could agree together, then and nobody participates in social media, then it's back to a level playing pitch. But the reality is that's highly unlikely to happen. So how do we support young people to have a more balanced approach, to find interest in other activities, but also to get to think about what are they getting from, even if you or I might think this is almost mindless and totally non-productive, is there a sense of comfort, a sense of satisfaction, is there a sense of achievement in the games, and how can that be achieved elsewhere?
Another one, I wonder if these problems around youth mental health were always in existence, but we didn't have the language or ability to say it or identify it.
Very much so. I think that we've moved, particularly in the broad mental health system, to thinking much more about a service user, or to thinking much more about the patient or the client and what is their experience. We've also learned to listen much more to young people. And I think what we're now discovering is that they have a lot to say. And also, we understand much more about adolescence and how youth develop and how the body and the brain and the mind and all of that develops. So I think it's about, we're now paying much more attention to it. And I think for many people and many adults, they're quite shocked with it and they're quite taken aback and almost feel overwhelmed with it. But there is, and this is what the article does point to and what our work is about, is there is hope. You know, really thinking about how do we structure our services, thinking about prevention and early intervention is hugely important.
Well, here's one about our services. Never mind 18-year-olds. Ironically, the HSE insists on treating 16-year-olds as adults, and that is too much pressure on children, especially those with chronic illnesses. In some ways, 16-year-olds are enchanted with being considered adults, but it places an unfair burden on them. And who gave the HSE the right to make adults from kids who are only in their mid-teens?
I think what that call is about is speaking around consent. And what we know, particularly, and I suppose if I speak to my own experience in terms of youth mental health and in Jigsaw, we know what's important for young people is that they have a sense themselves of autonomy about their own care. They have a sense of involvement in it. And if a young person is seeking, or if a parent is seeking support for a young person, but the young person isn't ready to participate in that, it's hugely important that they're supported to be able to really engage or give their consent. And what's interesting is for physical health, the age of consent is 16. Under the new Mental Health Act and the changes that will come, the proposals are to make that 16 for young people. And there's a lot to be said for that in terms of how, but it really is important how that's explained and understood. And it's also important in terms of making sure that a young person is really enabled to participate fully in whatever support has been offered.
Now, is the real cause of mental illness among young due to the general usage of cannabis and cocaine among teenagers?
I think in terms of thinking about substance misuse, it obviously does impact some young people, but it wouldn't account for absolutely everything. And it's also important in terms of thinking about what is the motivation, what is the reason, what is drug use of any type providing? Is it a numbingness? Is it a sense of providing a sense of calm? And are there other ways, and there are other ways, particularly in terms of talk therapy and supports, to help those young people?
Does not all of this come down to phones? If we were to list the benefits against the harms of having a phone in the teen years, I think we all would know how that list would go. The parents who started giving children phones before the age of 18 made big mistakes. We monitored what our toddlers watched on TV so they wouldn't see a scary cartoon. And then all of a sudden, at 12 years old, we're handing over phones with access to literally everything. More and more scientific research will show the damage of phones. A bit like smoking in pregnancy years ago. We know better now. That's from Kathleen.
Yes, certainly phones are the medium, and it's almost very easy in terms of saying, let's blame it on the phones. We need to really think about the relationships. What are phones providing? You know, if you sit around, you could see in a restaurant that when people order a meal, then maybe the whole family or the whole group are on their phones until the food comes. What is that about? How have we lost that ability in terms of relating and replaced it with something that's in front of us? We've done it because it's incredibly addictive and it's really stimulating. And that's probably more stimulating than some of the conversations around. What we try to emphasize is much more emphasis on relationships and talking and really thinking about that personal connection, which is so much stronger and really important for young people.
Dr. Joseph Duffy, clinical psychologist and CEO of Jigsaw, the National Centre for Youth Mental Health. Thank you very much.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.